What's up, everybody? Welcome to the TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. I'm Thomas.
I'm Tyson.
I studied exercise physiology and competed in many various sports ranging from wrestling to ultra running. I use that knowledge to combine today's science with ancient wisdom to live an optimal lifestyle and to spread that information onto the masses.
I'm a lifelong weightlifter and I'm obsessed with health and wellness. My degree in biology, with an emphasis in neurobiology, physiology, and behavior, allows me to take a deep dive into the most current literature and bring that information to you.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you'd like to show your support, please rate and review on your favorite podcast provider, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or SoundCloud. Also, sign up on our website, tntwellnessandnutrition.com, for all of our up-to-date content.
Let's get this started. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. This is episode 69. Today, we're going to be doing a whole discussion on the keto diet. I'm going to call it Keto Explained. So we're going to break down really step by step what it means, what happens in your body when you're in ketosis, and all the benefits of that. But first, let's do a quick check-in. So Tom, how's your week been?
It's been great, man. So we had Thanksgiving was this last week. Me and my family, we were kind of lazy this year. It was just my parents, me, and my fiance. So we went out to some restaurant instead of like making it at home. Man, I fucking loved it. I did not treat it like Thanksgiving at all. I had like a little bit of turkey and a little bit of like they had this cornbread stuffing. It just sounded too good to pass up.
Sounds good.
Outside of that, it was all, I made like 3 trips to the prime rib station. Got tons of, like, they had a lot of shellfish. So a lot of shrimp, a lot of oysters, clams, all that type of stuff. And yeah, like that was pretty much my meal.
Oh, that sounds really good.
Oh yeah, I kept going. I made like one normal plate of just like everything. And then when I went back for seconds and thirds, it was just the prime rib station.
Nice. Oh, you can't go wrong with that.
Oh no, not at all. It was so good.
Yeah.
Definitely worth it.
Yeah, that's cool.
That's the way to do it.
It is.
Yeah, so that's pretty much it. Well, actually, no, there's one thing I kind of wanted to comment on.
Sure.
So the person in front of me for like the buffet line or whatever, it was a man a little bit older than us with his like 8-year-old daughter. And she's like a borderline like throwing a fit while she's in line because she hates vegetables. And her dad's like, no, you have like, you can't get this unless you get this first type of thing. I really just wanted to like, look, man, the vegetables aren't that nutritious. Like no. She's getting everything from like the dark meat, like the stuff that she wants, like she'll be fine. But I'm pretty sure that wouldn't have gone over well, so I just, like, bit my tongue and, like, didn't say shit.
Nope.
I don't think that guy would have appreciated me, like, commenting on his parenting.
Not a parent. What is that called with animals knowing what to eat? It's like, instinctual eating?
I call it nutritional intelligence.
Nutritional intelligence, yeah. Like, we have that. Everyone thinks we're not animals, but we are. We're just super high functioning. We have nutritional intelligence. As children, you have to force feed vegetables.
I know. Especially because, like, most of the time you serve vegetables just plain.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you don't even have, like, that fat to help, like, with the vitamin
or
absorption.
Salt. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's, I don't know. Like, you're not really getting a whole lot out of just plain broccoli.
Yeah, like, we knew, all these kids know when they don't want to eat their broccoli or spinach. Like, they know it's shit.
You know?
I know. Then we have to, like, literally brainwash them their entire lives to eat it. And then when they're 35, all of a sudden they like spinach salads. Like, no, you don't, you know?
You like the super sugary, like, ultra-processed dressing that's on top of it. Like, that's what you like.
Exactly, yeah.
So that's pretty much it for me. What's new with you?
Well, I guess I want to clarify real quick. So we kind of have these podcasts in, like, out of order. So the tip of the week this week was recorded last week. So it's going to be a tip for Thanksgiving, even though we're talking about Thanksgiving right now. So it's a little out of order, but that's okay. You know, we kind of run long sometimes. You get me talking about, like, vegans and everything wrong with them, I can ramble for sure. So that's kind of what happened last week. I just talked way too long about the Game Changers, but...
Oh, yeah, talking about that. It was just the tip of the week. You can apply to pretty much any time, like Christmas, Hanukkah...
Birthdays, anything.
Like, New Year's. That's all coming up in the next couple weeks. So, yeah, just apply to that.
Exactly.
It's still relevant.
Yeah, that's always going to be up to date. It's just the holiday's going to change. This week I started reading the carnivore book by Sean Baker. If you don't know who Sean Baker is, he's just a big in the carnivore community. He's a doctor, he's a surgeon, and he's been carnivore for a few years, and he's a huge proponent of it. He's just, you know, he thinks it's everything. And I agree with him for most everything on damn near. He knows what he's talking about. So I decided, actually I haven't talked to you about this yet, but for me to really finish this book, what I want to do is do a review of the book as a podcast.
Okay.
Because eventually we're talking about diets that we like. Like, obviously today we're talking about keto because we're both huge believers in the keto diet. So we know a lot about it. We can talk about it. But we're also huge believers in the carnivore diet as well. And they're pretty much identical, to be honest. But
yeah, if you're doing the carnivore diet right, it should be keto.
It's going to be keto. Yeah. So I want to do, when we do a discussion on the carnivore diet, I kind of want it to be a discussion on carnivore and also a review of the carnivore book.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
It kind of, yeah. So I'm like 5 chapters in now. I haven't learned anything new, to be honest. It's just been a lot of top level stuff. But in the next few chapters, he does go into RDAs and just like the recommended daily allowance for vitamins and minerals and how that's been shifted in a carb based world. And yeah, that's interesting to me. Like, the requirements for me personally, who's carnivore, ketogenic, for, let's say, vitamin C, is different for someone who's eating the standard American diet.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Those RDAs, they're so misleading.
There's really not a lot of science there.
Yeah, and there's just so much variance depending on your lifestyle, your genetics. Like, there's a lot of, like, factors going on there.
There is.
Yeah, so that's... I do want to see, like, more RDAs coming out and more testing on that, especially when it comes to, like, the whole keto movement. I mean, yeah, it's going to be a long time before we see them for carnivore.
It is.
But I'd like to at least see them for, like, low-carb people.
Yeah, like, what are the RDAs for in a low-carb world, low-carb setting? So, yeah, like, there was something on vitamin A. So, a lot of people think there's no vitamin A in muscle meat. And I was just looking at this paper that showed all the vitamin A content in muscle meat that it's there. It's 100% there in, like, a bioavailable form, not, like, in vegetables. And same thing with vitamin C. Like, people think there's no vitamin C in meat, but there is. I even saw a study where would you think there's vitamin C in hot dogs?
I wouldn't think there's much of any, like, nutritional benefit.
Because it's processed, right?
Yeah.
There is 100% vitamin C in hot dogs.
Okay.
It's crazy. You know, people would think there's no vitamin C even in, like, the most prime cut of, let's say, heart, ribeye, liver. Like, no, there's none. There is. Even in the most processed meat, they're out there, which is going to be hot dogs. There's still vitamin C in hot dogs.
The one thing I'm curious about, like, what would be, like, dried meats, like jerky? Would that still have vitamin C because it's water soluble?
Oh, I don't know. I think with the water it would go, but that's just my top yeah. level logic. Yeah.
That's my thinking too. Maybe like the C and the B vitamins might be gone from like the super dehydrated stuff.
Yeah.
But outside of that, like hot dogs, there's still a little moisture there.
Yeah, there is. Yeah. So it's all in there. Yeah. So we'll do that maybe in a few weeks. I think next week we're going to talk about keto and kind of athletics and keto and glycogen stores and stuff like that. So a lot of people don't think keto is good for working out. So we'll talk about that. But today we're going to talk about just keto in general and why, I don't know, people think keto is some like magical state. It's like some big... I don't know, like elephant in the room. Like, you know, everyone doesn't really know what keto is.
Well, you either hear that it's a miracle diet and it's going to cure everything under the sun, or it's going to kill you tomorrow. There's like no middle ground. It's one or the other, depending on who you're listening to.
Yeah. So I want to give people kind of just literally the biology of what's happening when you do the keto diet, what's happening inside your body and why it's perfectly natural and why it's extremely healthy. So that's what we're going to talk about today. Just what is keto and honestly how to do it right.
We won't get through all the benefits of a ketogenic diet today, but we'll definitely dive into some of the benefits of ketosis and we'll finish it up next week.
Yeah, I think that'd be a good idea. But first, I just wanted to really... I mean, you're going to have to stop me through this because I have pages and pages of notes and...
Seamless transition, by the way.
Yeah, seamless transition into the game changers to keto. But... it's just keto can be a slightly complicated sometimes. And I actually did read these to my wife on multiple occasions. Her eyes kind of glazed over and she was like, I don't know what you're saying. Like, as soon as I say something like acetyl-CoA, she's like, she just blanks out. You know what I'm saying? So, and I assume, not that she's not smart, she is, but it's just, this isn't her kind of field of expertise. So she doesn't know. So I'm going to need you to kind of help me make it a little more, I guess, palatable to people.
I'll translate for you.
Yeah, please do. Because my ass gets rolling and I just start talking. And this shit makes sense to me, but I understand it doesn't make sense to everybody. So what is keto exactly? So that's just a term we use to describe when the body makes ketone bodies. And these are products of fat metabolism that our body can burn for fuel. So there's 3 different types of ketone bodies. We have acetone, we have acetoacetate, we have beta-hydroxybutyrate. So of the total, about 2% of that is acetone, 20% is acetoacetate, and 78% of all the ketone bodies is beta-hydroxybutyrate. So that's really, that's a heavy hitter there. And you'll usually see, like, on a label just BHB. So that's really the big ketone body that's doing all the work. So once you get your beta-hydroxybutyrate levels in your blood above 0.5 millimoles, you will technically be in ketosis. Not that that really matters, but, you know, some people really care about that stuff. You know, they measure the ketones in their blood. So if you get over 0.5, you're in ketosis.
So, like, the people that really need to be, like, measuring like this, hey, if you're just trying to lose weight, it's probably not you. If you have epilepsy, this is where you should be paying attention. You should be paying attention to your ketone levels because you want to always be in a constant state of ketosis. Another people, like, you know, if you're dementia, Alzheimer's, severely diabetic, maybe you have kidney disease, like you're far along with that process. Yeah, you should be trying to be in ketosis as much time as possible. If you're just trying to lose weight, you know, like, hey, you're obviously, your health isn't optimal at the moment, but you're not so far gone where, like, you need to change your life today or you're going to die. Like, if you're just trying to get, like, small results, you don't need to be in ketosis 24/7.
No, definitely not.
Like, I've barely measured my ketone levels. Like,
I did the pee strips when I first started. That was it.
Yeah, same here. I never, like, spent money to invest in it just because I can pretty much tell when I'm in ketosis and when I'm not, especially, like, in the fast.
Yeah, when you're in a fast, you're in, like, deep ketosis. You're, like, running on jet fuel.
I feel like I've had 10 cups of coffee, like, all day, every day when I'm in the fast like that.
Yeah, me too. But yeah, just talk about keto for, like, fat loss real quick. So this is something which is a huge, huge benefit of ketosis. So the creation of ketone bodies actually gives our body the ability to waste calories. And this wouldn't happen if you're on the standard American diet and you're consuming carbohydrates every few hours. You're constantly stimulating insulin. This wouldn't happen. So ketosis gives our body the ability to waste calories, and it does it a few ways. So it wastes calories in the form of urine, which is called ketoneuria, and in the breath, in the form of acetone and acetate. Acetone and acetoacetate can simply diffuse into the air in our lungs and are exhaled. And this accounts for about 5 to 10% of the total ketone bodies produced, which is a huge chunk. So just think some real rough math. You have a 2,000 calorie diet. If 5% of those calories are simply exhaled, that's 100 calories a day that you don't have to account for. That's cool.
Yeah, I mean, 100, it's 100 to 200 calories on a 2,000 calorie diet, which is pretty small.
Yeah.
I think, like, the average male is probably around 2,500 to 3,000 calories. So, like, you can throw that number up quite a bit.
Yeah, more. That's, like, the lowest number.
I mean, you're exhaling, like, 2 to 3X, basically.
Yeah, that's just extra stuff, you know. And what, that's not a bad thing. That's always a great thing. You're giving yourself a little bit of wiggle room. And this is one of the reasons why you really counting calories is stupid, because no one's tracking their acetone levels in their breath. You know what I'm saying?
And because of that, the acetone and the acetoacetate, I'm not sure exactly which one of those it is, but like a breathalyzer for a blood alcohol content, it picks up one of those, or maybe both.
Probably acetone.
So you'll get like a slightly false positive if you're in ketosis from a breathalyzer, even if you haven't been drinking. You'll get, I mean, you're not going to, you know, get pulled over and get a DUI for it, but you're going to get, you won't get a zero.
So when you tell the cops, no, I haven't drank, he's gonna be like, yeah, right, bitch. You had like at least one beer.
Yeah. So like, I don't, good luck explaining this type of science to a judge.
Yeah. No, the acetone diffused through my lungs and the alveoli.
I mean, honestly, like, good luck explaining the science to a dietitian. Yeah. So like, I don't think you'll be able to, it won't be very convincing to a judge, but hey, maybe you got that keto judge.
No, it's true, man. It's true. We literally breathe out this stuff, and that's why your breath can be kind of sweet sometimes. But so what about ketoneuria? So that's just peeing out ketone bodies. So we've talked about this, I think we talked about it last week with diabetes, that an old test for diabetes was actually sweet urine.
Yeah, we talked about how some people are obsessed with urine. So
yes, that's so what it
doctors
was.
Doctors used to drink it to see if you had diabetes or not.
So you can pee out sugar too, right? So yes, you can. You can 100% pee out sugar, but sugar is harmful to the kidneys. So sugar is sticky, and it clumps together with various things in our blood through the process of glycation. So when there's so much sugar in our blood, this is going to be like 180 to 200 and plus, right? And again, a normal blood sugar is going to be under 100. So we're talking already like twice as much sugar in our blood that it starts to come out in our urine, but it actually is damaging the kidneys. So think of like a bowl in a china shop. The kidney filters and tubules are tiny and delicate. So now you have a big ass piece of sugar stuck together with a few different proteins wrecking shop. It's not a good thing. It's the body's last resort. So it's two options here when a sugar is so high. is to damage the kidneys and to maybe eventually get chronic kidney disease and die slowly, or let this sugar get so high in your blood that your blood gets so thick and so, like, honestly clumped together that you have a stroke and die immediately. So it's like the lesser of two evils.
Yeah, it's a slow, painful death instead of an immediate death.
Exactly. So as the body is trying to survive, trying to get past this traumatic event, which is high blood sugar. It's not a good thing at all.
And you see kidney disease, it's everywhere. There are so many dialysis clinics. I mean, probably every city's got like 10 of them.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's crazy, and there's more and more popping up all the time. And then, like, with the chronic kidney disease, like, hey, it's at least like, hey, you can change. You have a chance at survival. With a stroke, like, hey, you're dead.
You're dead. Yeah, especially, you know, if it's a bad one, you know?
And how can you get your blood sugar over 200?
You're not diabetic.
You're not naturally going to do that.
It'd be hard.
Yeah, like, you have to consume so much sugar in your body, or so much sugar through your diet to be able to do that. So that's one of the benefits of a ketogenic diet. It just tells you, hey, don't eat an unnatural amount of sugar. Any sugar that's going to be in your blood is going to be produced by your body, mostly. And your body's not going to kill yourself.
No.
It's not going to produce so much sugar that you die. It's going to be smart enough to keep you alive.
Yes, 100%. Yeah, I forget. We had a podcast with Mike, like, God, it was like, I don't know, maybe a year ago now, but I think his blood sugar was over 500 or 600 at some point.
I want to say it was like in the sixes.
That's crazy.
I did not know it could get that high.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. You know, you can get real sick, man. Diabetes is nothing fun about diabetes. But yeah, so you pee out ketone bodies, ketoneuria. Ketone bodies don't glycate, which is a huge benefit, and they don't harm the kidneys as they pass through it. And there's actual studies showing the benefits of ketoneuria. So I pulled, and again, I'm going to put all these studies on the website, so check these out if you want to. I recommend, actually, I'm going to have a shit ton of references for this post, so check them out. But this is a quote. So it says, comparisons of metabolic parameters in both genders also showed that almost all metabolic parameters, including body weight, BMI, waist circumference, HDL, glucose, triglycerides, blood pressure, and insulin levels, were significantly better in the ketoneuria group than in the non-ketoneuria group, before and after adjustment for age, tobacco use, and alcohol consumption. That's like, I mean, this is talking about ketoneuria, but what this really shows is the benefits of ketosis.
Yeah, it makes it sound like that's a natural state that people should be in.
Like, thank you.
All these things are tobacco use. Okay, that's very unnatural. Alcohol consumption, very unnatural. So, like, hey, it's making up for those differences.
Even with that stuff, these people have better body weight, better HDL, better glucose. Like, it's just, when you count for everything, it's just the benefits of ketosis are through the roof. And what this paper pretty much shows is that all the heavy set people, the people with insulin resistance, didn't produce any ketone bodies. And so, therefore, they didn't have any ketoneuria or ketone bodies in the urine. So, they just weren't metabolically healthy at all. So, this and next part.
That makes a lot of sense, as that's kind of the reason that they are fat. Is they're storing all this fat because they can't tap into it. They have all this energy there. They just don't know how to use it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's just so wasteful.
Yeah, and it makes perfect sense, right? Mm-hmm. When you think of it in that sense, that these heavyweight people, these heavy set people, just can't burn their fat for fuel.
And that's also why they're, like, constantly hungry. Like, they shouldn't be hungry. There's no reason that they should be hungry.
At some points, they have a million calories on around their stomach.
And I think it was the Obesity Code or maybe the Complete Guide to Fasting. They talk about a man who fasted for over a year. He was over 400 pounds. He lost, like, 250 pounds by doing a water-only fast for over a year.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you can store over a year's worth of food on your body. Like, that's how... It's incredible how you can do that. You can survive a year... Just off your own body fat.
Yeah.
I mean, not everybody. I can't do that. I'll die, like, probably within, like, a month or two.
Yeah.
But, I mean, like, hey, so if you have that much body fat on you, there's no reason that you should be fat or should be hungry. Yeah.
And if they are, because their metabolisms are so deranged.
Yeah, they've been just tapping into the glucose all the time and don't know how to use those ketones, don't know how to produce them.
Yep. So this next part is going to be kind of technical, so sorry in advance, but Tom will be here to kind of break it down. I wanted to... really break down what ketosis is, because like I said in the intro, people think, I don't know, ketosis and ketones, don't you think people think it's like some magical thing? It's like some magic bullet? Like it's something super special?
I mean, honestly, when you hear all the claims that, it cures diabetes, it cures heart disease, it cures cancer, like, hey, it does sound magical.
I guess it does, yeah. But what is it exactly, right? So if I had just one sentence of what ketosis is, it is simply a spillover of the acetyl-CoA pool. That's it, long period, done. So your next question is probably, what is acetyl-CoA? So acetyl-CoA is just the end product of food metabolism. So carbs, proteins, and fats get converted to acetyl-CoA before they are turned into energy. And that just happens. That happens every day with all of us. That's just how our biochemistry is. So normally, acetyl-CoA gets combined with oxaloacetate to create citrate, and that's what starts the citric acid cycle. This produces some ATP and some high-energy molecules, NADH and FADH2, that then go into the electron transport chain to create way more ATP. And ATP is just the energy fuel for our bodies. Think of it like the AA battery for our cells. That's just what it is. And if you want to learn more about that whole process, we have a podcast on CoQ10, which focuses specifically on the electron transport chain. I think it's very interesting, but I'm a huge nerd as well. So
yeah, that was way back.
That's way back.
First, yeah. 20, probably.
Yeah, I think that was like 16 or 17. But yeah, check that out if you're interested in that. But the next question probably is, why would the acetyl-CoA pool spill over? And again, this is all, actually, I didn't even say this. This is all happening in the liver. The liver is like our big factory of our internal organs. It produces all this stuff. So there's two reasons why the acetyl-CoA pool will spill over. So the first reason is beta oxidation. And that's simply the burning of fat for fuel, which creates a ton of acetyl-CoA, which is a good thing. The second reason is a low-carb diet drives oxaloacetate to be converted into glucose rather than used to create citrate with acetyl-CoA. And this is the key step that induces ketosis. And here's a quote: a depletion of oxaloacetate relative to acetyl-CoA is the key step for the production of ketone bodies within the liver. So why is that? So oxaloacetate can be converted to glucose through gluconeogenesis. And what's that? Do we have a whole podcast on gluconeogenesis?
Yeah, we do. Here, I'll summarize that in a sentence.
Yeah.
So it's basically, instead of getting glucose from your diet, you're getting glucose from stuff that's in your body. Whether that's proteins, like amino acids, or if it's fat, the glycerol backbone. Like, you're getting it from one or the other.
Exactly. Yeah. So in a low-carb state, oxaloacetate gets used to create that glucose. So even like someone like me, I eat no carbs, my blood glucose will never drop to zero. Like, my body's always producing enough sugar to maintain the needs, whatever it is that day, it produces enough. So all that oxaloacetate, or at least the majority of it, gets used to create sugar. So now that acetyl-CoA has nothing to combine with to make citrate in the liver. So the acetyl-CoA gets converted into ketone bodies to be shipped out of the liver to every cell in our body. And honestly, it's just that simple. It's straightforward. So how does this happen? So remember, we have a liver cell packed full of acetyl-CoA and low levels of oxaloacetate. So what does our body do? It combines two acetyl-CoAs together to form acetoacetyl-CoA. Then we combine a third acetyl-CoA molecule through the enzyme HMG-CoA synthase, and this is a rate-limiting step, to make HMG-CoA. And this is a crossroads. This can be used, HMG-CoA, to make cholesterol in the body as well as ketone bodies. And this will be relevant later on. That's why I put that enzyme in there. So HMG-CoA then gets converted into ketone bodies. The first one made is acetoacetate. And this also creates acetone spontaneously. It just kind of breaks down spontaneously into acetone, which is released via our lungs. Our body doesn't use acetone for fuel. That's why sometimes your breath can smell a little funny when you first start ketosis. You are literally breathing out calories in the form of acetone.
That keto breath.
Yeah, exactly. So, and I talked about that a little bit earlier, wasting calories. That's what we're talking about. And you can also breathe out acetoacetate as well. So our body then makes a third ketone body, beta hydroxybutyrate, by using NADH, which is one of those high energy molecules, to reduce acetoacetate. So beta hydroxybutyrate is, and again, reduction, this is kind of, when you hear reduce, you think of like a negative, like take away.
Yes, make smaller. But that's not what that means.
It's not what that means. In chemistry, reduction is a gaining. So you gain in electrons when you reduce something, and that's because electrons are negative. And I know that's not intuitive at all, but that's what's going on. So in that sense, beta hydroxybutyrate is a high energy ketone body. And that's just my term for it. That's what I say. That's not, you're going to find that anywhere else. But that's what makes it so therapeutic. So the two ketone bodies used for fuel are acetoacetate and beta-hydroxybutyrate. The ketone bodies are water-soluble. These are produced in the liver, like I said. They're water-soluble, so they diffuse into our blood and get spread around our body. They easily cross the blood-brain barrier, and this is why the body won't simply use fatty acids for fuel, because fatty acids have a hard time crossing the blood-brain barrier. Ketones don't. They get through just fine.
Fat and water don't mix.
At all. Exactly. Yeah. Wonder why we have LDL in our body? That's why. And yes, I am going to talk about LDL in a minute as well. So remember what we use to make ketone bodies? We just use acetyl-CoA. Just combine a couple of them together. That's it. So when the ketone bodies arrive at the desired location, which is any cell in the body, they simply get reconverted to acetyl-CoA through the enzyme coenzyme transferase. That reformed acetyl-CoA then gets ran through the citric acid cycle to create ATP, which again is just energy for our body. And these target cells have adequate levels of oxaloacetate because they aren't involved in gluconeogenesis like the liver is. So they have no problems running that acetyl-CoA through the citric acid cycle. And then the breakdown of beta-hydroxybutyrate generates NADH as well in the target cell. And NADH, which is just a high energy molecule, can be used by the target cell to create even more ATP in the electron transport chain. So with the creation of beta-hydroxybutyrate in the liver and subsequent breakdown of beta-hydroxybutyrate in the target cell, that cell can now generate more energy because of the extra NADH created. And this is a huge benefit of ketosis that I don't think people talk about enough. You're putting your body in a high energy state. And truthfully, this is a normal state we're supposed to be in. Our cells use ATP for everything. Muscle contractions, cellular pumps, transports, the creation of RNA and DNA. Like, without ATP, we'd be dead.
Yeah, I mean, like, you need energy for anything. Even if you're sleeping, like, your heart's still beating. Like, your brain is still active. Like, you're digesting food. Like, you need it for every single thing possible.
24/7, 365. You know, it's so important. So to give our body this fuel that is so energy dense and so clean is awesome. And that's a huge benefit of ketosis. So,
all right. So I'm going to do my best to kind of summarize
that. You should, yeah.
All right. So
the first, like I said, I just get rolling.
The very first step is, all right, so you break down fat to create all this extra acetyl-CoA. So in order to do that, the first thing that needs to happen is you need to have low glucose levels in your body. If glucose is present, the demand for this step doesn't happen. If you have a lot of glucose, then your body's going to use the glucose because it has nowhere to store it. So like, hey, you're in a low glucose state, then it's like, okay, I have all this other fat, all this other forms of energy. Let's start tapping into that. So that's the very first thing that you need is to have low blood glucose in order for this to happen. So
now, which most people don't. On a standard American diet, you're going to have carbs multiple times throughout the day.
Oh, you're supposed to have 6 meals a day, and all of them have some sort of serving of grains.
Yep.
Yeah. So you're always going to have high levels of glucose. So ideally, low glucose, now you have to tap into this, all this body fat. And because body fat is so, like, calorically dense.
Energy dense.
Yeah, perfect. You get all that acetyl-CoA. Now that you have just all this abundant acetyl-CoA, your body's like, oh, now let's start using it. So it creates, through tons of steps,
yeah,
I'm not going to go through a wall, ketone bodies. And those ketone bodies can basically go everywhere. There's a few places that can't use ketones. Those are very few. And hey, that basically just spares, like, you're going to have some glucose in your body.
Yes.
You should always have ketones and glucose. I mean, like, the ratio is going to be different depending on what kind of energy state you're in. But you're always going to have both. So basically, all the things that need glucose can use that little bit of glucose that's in your blood. Everything else that can use ketones are going to use ketones. And what would you want? You have access to, like, an unlimited amount of ketones. So that's what you want to be using. And you have a very, very finite amount of glucose. So use that finite amount of glucose for the things that can only use it. And everything else that can use ketones, use the ketones.
Exactly. Great point.
I mean, I didn't really want to summarize every single step there.
No, that was good. That was really good.
Get through that citric acid cycle.
Yeah. I hate that we have to talk about that, but it's just the truth, man. You know what I mean?
Well, that's how energy gets created. That's the breakdown. Energy is like the most basic breakdown of any of this biology stuff.
Yep. So the liver cell creates ketone bodies. So the question some people might have out there is, why doesn't the ketone body, or why doesn't the liver just use up these ketone bodies? Why doesn't the liver simply just eat them all up? So the liver doesn't have that enzyme, coenzyme transferase, needed to break down ketone bodies. So honestly, it's a perfect system. The majority, like Tom just said, of all the other cells in our body do have this enzyme. The liver generates the ketone bodies, but doesn't use them. So liver cells, red blood cells, and some cells that don't have mitochondria can't use ketone bodies. Now, they have to use glucose, or in the liver cell case, they can use just fatty acids. They don't have to use ketone bodies. But like you said, some cells, if you don't have a mitochondria, they can't use ketone bodies. And that actually, that one sentence right there is like my solution to cancer, by the way. You know what I mean? We talk about function. I don't know when the last time we talked about cancer, but it's really just a dysfunction of the mitochondria. And they can't use ketone bodies. So we should have ketone bodies through the roof, you know?
So I've been hearing like, all right, so like it's 90-something percent of cancers can't use ketone bodies, but it seems like there might be some that can.
I think in a petri dish, some can.
Yeah, like I haven't seen a lot of strong evidence like saying that they can. I haven't seen any like scientific studies on that yet. But anyway, like I'm, as far as I know, every single cancer cell can use glucose. So it still seems like, hey, that you should go keto.
Yes.
Like, I mean, what's, it's at worst neutral, at best it's going to cure your disease. So it seems like, yeah, it's probably still the way to go.
Yeah. So there are some, so that's just the science of ketosis. That's just what it is. It's not some like magical thing. Our body's doing it all the time, you know? But there are some common worries about keto that I hear all the time. I really do. People say, oh, I'm too old. I'm diabetic. I have heart disease, or heart disease runs in the family. My cholesterol is too high. Well, guess what? None of them are a good reason not to do keto. So
actually, all those are reasons to do it.
Exactly. You know, but it's just the ignorance out there is through the roof. So I wanted to talk a little bit about ketoacidosis, because have people thrown that in your face about the keto diet sometimes?
Yeah, but I mean, like that very quickly got dismissed. So when I was going to the school, like I learned this was that one of the ways you can get ketoacidosis is from eating a silly diet, like an Atkins type diet.
Yep.
Did you learn the same thing?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And when I was in school, I was like, okay, that makes sense.
It makes sense.
It makes perfect sense. Like this teacher's telling me it's gotta be true.
Mm-hmm.
So
it has it in the name.
While that is true, you can get ketoacidosis. That's only true for type 1 diabetics.
Yeah. Like, it's funny. So doing this, doing research for this, I watch like a bunch of YouTube videos that break down visually the mechanism actions for all this shit. You know what I'm saying? And I had this guy break down ketosis, like step by step, every enzyme. And you can thank me later for not going through every enzyme. Like I did make it as pretty much basic as I could.
You held some stuff out?
I really did. Trust me. I did not want to put every enzyme in there because the names are so stupid. Like it's just, I can't even pronounce it. But, like, I was so irritated because he was like, this state, ketoacidosis can happen if the ketone diet, I left a YouTube comment, like, breaking it down, like, no, bro, like, this is not right. Normally, I don't care. Who cares about YouTube comments? But yeah. I had to do it because it's just so, the misinformation is so crazy, you know? And I'm going to break down why this is true. So, ketoacidosis is not the same thing as a keto diet, not even close. And the correct term for that really is diabetic ketoacidosis. Because this won't occur in anyone without diabetes or anyone that's not like super, super sick. Like any normal person in the keto diet, this is not going to happen to you. So ketone bodies can donate protons in the blood, making it acidic. However, like we talked about in the Alkaline Diet podcast, our body has numerous regulators when it comes to the pH of our blood. In a normal person eating keto, these ketone bodies don't make our blood more acidic in any meaningful way. So what does ketoacidosis look like? So you'll see people come into the hospital with uncontrolled diabetes that can't stop vomiting. And that's because diabetes, in a nutshell, is glucagon run amok. So the body is breaking down fat at an extremely fast pace. So it's outpacing the body's capacity to metabolize the ketone bodies. So this results in really high ketones in the blood. And this causes people to vomit. And that's because excess ketone bodies trigger a part of our brainstem called the area prostrema. And it's where the chemoreceptor trigger zone is. And so everyone knows this, that common symptoms of chemotherapy are vomiting. And that's because these drugs bind to this area in the brainstem. And it's because it's not well protected by the blood-brain barrier. So molecules in our blood are able to bind there and induce a response like vomiting. Does this sound like the keto diet? Did you vomit continuously when you started the keto diet?
No, not at all.
Yeah, no, this isn't the keto diet. This is a disease state. You know what I'm saying? So comparing the two is just, because the names sound similar, they couldn't be farther from each other, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's absolutely crazy. And I'm really upset that you don't learn the difference between, like, ketoacidosis and just a ketogenic diet. Like, how those are not equivalent at all. So, one thing that, it happens is, like, so type 1 diabetics are the only people that this can happen. And that's because they don't produce insulin. So, they can have very high levels of blood glucose. But since they don't have that insulin produced, or inadequate insulin produced, they're not able to actually use that glucose for fuel. So they need to produce ketones so their body can survive. However, there's a, what is it called? Your body prefers to use glucose for fuel instead of ketones. Metabolic preference, is that it?
Maybe, just like how it prefers alcohol over sugar. Yeah, I forget, but yeah, you can say
okay, that. Okay, it's metabolic preference.
Yeah.
So your body always wants to use glucose before ketones, and that's because your body can only store a very, very finite amount of glucose. So it's got to use it, or you're going to have high blood sugar, and you're going to have a shit ton of issues with that. So,
yeah, it's not a pro vote for glucose.
No, because like you said earlier, we use alcohol first, and that's because alcohol is very dangerous. We need to get that shit out of our body.
Yes. So if you use that logic, we should all run off alcohol, saying, you know, glucose is a preferred fuel.
So all those frat boys out there, go on your alcohol-rich diet. You're good.
Yeah, you'll be fine. Yeah, exactly.
All right. Just kidding. Don't go on alcohol diet.
Fuck it. Go ahead. There's too many people on the planet anyways.
So you have this extremely high amount of glucose, but you're in a very low energy state because your body can't use any of it. So your body makes up for that by creating a bunch of ketones. But since all this glucose is there, your body's not using the ketones either because it's supposed to be using the glucose. This only happens in very sick individuals, like type 1 diabetics. Like, they're not, that's not
that a very, don't control their diabetes.
Yes, that's not a very large population of people. It's a very small select of people, and they have a disease, they have an issue.
Exactly.
So, like, the ketoacidosis thing, like, isn't going to happen in normal people, and it shouldn't happen in anybody if you're regulating your blood sugars, right?
Exactly. No, like I said, it's glucagon run amok. So, you have, in our pancreas, you have alpha cells and beta cells. So, beta cells produce insulin. That's going to bring blood sugar down. Then, alpha cells produce glucagon, and that's going to raise blood sugar up. But glucagon doesn't just raise blood sugar. It raises fucking everything. So, it'll break down amino acids, and it'll also break down fatty acids. And this aspect of glucagon breaking down fatty acids does it at such an extreme pace that all this shit spills over. And that's really... And again, nothing normal about this. This is someone who isn't controlling their diabetes.
Yeah, and the glucagon is like the anti-insulin.
Yeah, it's like the yin and yang type thing.
And part of the reason that glucagon is breaking down fat and amino acids is to create more glucose. Because it's using them up, or should be using them up.
It should be, so but it's not.
Yeah, it's not a good situation. This is the only time it can be... I mean, this is the only time, like, being in a ketogenic diet can be dangerous. But yeah. That's because you're not following a ketogenic diet.
No, you're not controlling your diet at all, and you're letting your just body ruin itself, honestly.
So. Yeah, because the only way this could happen is if you're having both. You're having a high-fat and a high-carb diet.
Yeah.
And you're not taking insulin or doing anything to manage
it. What you're supposed to do, exactly.
So, one thing about this, though, is this state can be beneficial for athletes, but in a very, very small window.
Yeah, this is like a Ben Greenfield hack, right?
It is, and I've also heard more and more people starting to talk about it.
Oh, really?
So, there is one time where having a lot of ketones in your blood and having high blood glucose can be beneficial, and that's if it's only for a very short window of time, and you're about to do some sort of obstacle course race, maybe play a football game, basketball game, something where you're not only going to need a lot of explosive energy, but you're also going to need quite a bit of endurance. So, like an ultra-endurance race that's, you know, going to be 10 hours, probably not going to be beneficial. Probably going to, you're going to burn through all that glucose and then those ketones within like an hour or two, probably not going to help you out. But this is like a very abnormal state where you can take advantage of these high levels of two energy systems at the same time. So you have an event that's like 30 minutes long, an hour, hour and a half long. We're still doing a lot of research on this, so we don't know the absolute optimal type of sports that this would be beneficial, but it could be. But the way you would do this is... you have a high-carb meal, and then you drink a bunch of exogenous ketones.
Mm-hmm.
Like, your body's not going to, like, produce this level, this state.
Naturally. No.
This is not a natural state.
Yeah, in 2019, you can hack it and hopefully get some sort of athletic benefit.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's true. So I also want to go back to kind of the worries about keto. So you shouldn't worry about ketoacidosis. That's not going to happen if you're... a somewhat normal human being.
As long as you're not a type 1 diabetic.
Yeah, don't worry about it, right? And even if you are, you should still do ketosis, just manage your diabetes better. But
just thinking of it like this historically, so type 1 diabetes is it's a genetic disease.
Sure.
So the only way that those genes could have been passed on is that those people that had it in the past survived. So the only way that these people in the past could have survived without taking insulin shots every day, hey, guess what?
Low-carb diet.
We haven't had insulin shots forever.
No.
It would be a low-carb diet if they were in a state of ketosis. That's the only way that these people could have possibly survived and we have this disease passed on.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe this disease just popped up in the last 150 years and it's some sort of genetic mutation.
Yeah.
But I have very strong doubts.
Very strong doubts. No, I think that logic is sound. And I think, I don't think you're making too far of a leap. You know what I mean?
Well, especially since we know doctors in the past used to be drinking urine because of diabetes.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, it obviously was there for a long time.
Something was happening. Yeah, exactly. So, so what are some of the other, like, health markers, like biomarkers you can see with the keto diet? So normally with the keto diet, you'll see HDL go up. That's also known as good cholesterol. You'll see triglycerides go down. That's just fat in the blood.
Which is another good thing. You want low triglycerides and high HDL.
You do. Insulin will go down, which is a good thing. But also LDL, which is sometimes called bad cholesterol, even though it shouldn't be, can sometimes go up. And so people are so focused on cholesterol, they've been told their entire lives to fear cholesterol, especially in the form of LDL.
Man, I was talking about this for like 2 hours the other day.
Were you really?
Yeah.
To who?
My fiance's mom.
Oh, no, I don't even want to know that conversation. Yeah. Do you want to talk about it or no?
I mean, not really. I mean, it's too personal.
Okay. So, yeah. Yeah, I get it. So despite seeing benefits in damn near every aspect of their lives, right? You start the keto diet, you have weight loss. You have sustained energy throughout the day. You have decreased inflammation throughout your entire body. Your autoimmune issues completely healed. You have appetite control for once in your life. People will still tell you, especially your doctors, to focus on LDL. And it's just like, in my opinion, like, should we really focus on one extremely flawed biomarker when our body is clearly showing signs of improved health? Like, my answer is no. Like, it makes no sense.
Definitely not. And especially if you look at this, like, okay, so if you're doing a questionnaire on what is your risk of heart disease, being overweight is a risk. High LDL is a risk. Well, if you lost a bunch of weight, you took away one risk. If your LDL went up, okay, so you added a risk. That's neutral. Now, if you look at all the other benefits, you have like 5 things in the positive, 1 in the negative.
You're still in a net positive.
Yeah, it's still net positive. So I don't understand what the big issue with that is.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, there's a drug to cure it.
There is. There's a drug we can sell you that'll cure it. Yeah. Exactly. But so why can the keto diet result in higher LDL in some people? Because that does happen. Dave Feldman, he's kind of the keto guy. He has a website called The Cholesterol Code. He calls these people lean mass hyper responders. And they're people who start the keto diet or just a low carb diet, carnivore diet, whatever. And their LDL goes to the roof, like 300, 400, 500. So
Dave Feldman is like the man when it comes to cholesterol.
Oh, he's the guy.
100%. I mean, heart disease, I like Ivor Cummings, but when it's just specifically cholesterol, Feldman.
Yeah, Feldman for sure. Yeah, I pulled a lot from him as well through this. So he's a real smart guy.
And if you really want to nerd out, there's podcasts with both of them. And they really go through the weeds.
They really, yeah, you think I get technical? Shit, not even close compared to those guys. But yeah, it's funny. I always, like I said, being a jack of all trades, I listen to their stuff sometimes and I'm like envious.
Yeah.
I'm like, man, they're like, there's so many layers past me. It's ridiculous, you know? But there are three kind of ways or, I don't know, mechanisms that LDL can go up on a keto diet. I'll break those down. But then I'm going to break down why that's an actual good thing and not a bad thing. So the first way is the pathway used to create ketone bodies is the same pathway the body uses to create cholesterol. So again, I talked about it earlier. The rate limiting step in ketone production, that was the enzyme HMG-CoA synthase. So the creation of HMG-CoA results in the creation of ketone bodies, but the body can also use that enzyme to make cholesterol. So that can cause the amount of cholesterol in our body to be increased as well. Now, hard stop, this isn't a bad thing. It's actually a great thing. It's one of the reasons ketosis is therapeutic. The second reason, go ahead.
Well, isn't this also usually temporary? It's not a permanent state. You don't all of a sudden get 600 LDL and it stays high. Generally, that number pops up right in the beginning and then balances out.
Yeah, that's true. Some people it does stay high forever, but there can be a blip, and that's just our body simply getting used to this new metabolic pathway. You know, there is a, what do you call it, keto adaption? You know what I'm saying? Exactly. There's a phase that your body has to go through.
Especially when you're going, you're pretty much flipping your diet. Most people are, when they go ketogenic, they're flipping their diet like a completely around.
180.
A complete 180. So you went from using glucose all the time to all of a sudden using ketones and triglycerides all the time.
Yeah.
Or most of the time. Like, it's a drastic change. So one thing that Feldman talks about is one of the reasons like cholesterol is such a bad marker is because the more that we eat, the less our body produces.
Mm-hmm.
The less cholesterol we eat, the more we eat, the more cholesterol our body produces to make up for it. So eating cholesterol has very little impact on our body's cholesterol. So one thing that's going on is like, hey, all of a sudden, if you're eating a high-fat diet, most likely you're getting a lot of cholesterol with it. So that's kind of, your body isn't used to all of a sudden having this like influx of all this extra dietary cholesterol. So that's why, part of the reason why it goes...
It can't go up.
It can go out of whack at the beginning.
Exactly.
But it'll balance out once your body gets used to it.
It will. And trust me, even high LDL in the context of a keto diet is not a bad thing. Honestly, I think it's a good thing. But it's just, you're going to have to forget all the things you think you know. And that's really hard for a lot of people, you know?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we're talking like 60 years of... A lot of science, a lot of
a lot of misinformation.
Yeah, a lot of misinformation, a lot of bad science, a lot of money, and like, hey, heart disease has been the number one killer in our country for I think a century now,
or yeah.
damn near. So hey, it's the media. Anytime there's something that comes out about heart disease, media is always going to be talking about it. So it's like front and center. Like when it comes to the disease state, it's like there's so many like misnomers with this.
There is
misinformation.
Okay, so the second reason why sometimes your LDL can go up on a ketogenic diet is, again, the production of ketone bodies and cholesterol happens in the liver. So on a keto diet, the liver is producing more cholesterol on its own, so it can downregulate the receptors on the outside of the liver that allows cholesterol to come back into the liver. So this leaves more cholesterol in our blood to be used by other cells. And again, this isn't a bad thing, this will result in higher cholesterol values on a blood test. You know, you might be in the 220 range, 240 range, 250 range. And that's because the liver has enough. It's doing its thing. It's letting all the other cells use its cholesterol, which is a good thing. The third reason is the body uses LDL to deliver energy and nutrients like fat to the cells in our body. When we start to run off fat for fuel, like a ketogenic diet, it makes sense that we would have more LDL in our blood. Like, that's pretty logical.
Yeah, we talked about earlier, like fat and water don't mix. So if you're going to transport fat throughout your body, you need these LDL to transport it.
To carry the fat, exactly. So this is another aspect that makes keto so therapeutic. Like, our body needs cholesterol to repair itself. And something me and you both say a lot, we say it to people we work with, is that first your body must heal itself, then the weight loss begins. And guess what? Our body uses cholesterol to heal itself. So this is one of those aspects that's so... I don't know, great about ketosis that doesn't get talked about a lot, you know?
Oh, I know. And it's like one of the biggest areas of ketosis is, I think, of like improved brain health. And one of the major like side effects of a statin, a cholesterol lowering drug, is dementia.
Yeah.
So you could think of low cholesterol is damaging your brain. Ketones is like the cure to that.
Yes.
So it's like, hey, the complete opposite.
It's crazy. I know. God, we're going to have to do a podcast on statins at some point and just break down how corrupt that whole system is, you know?
We're going to have to do like a series on that.
Yeah, I guess we probably would. Yeah, but I do want to at some point. But yeah, like I said earlier, I think having high LDL in the context of a keto diet with markers like high HDL and low triglycerides is honestly a good thing. And I want to go into why. So I think, honestly, people think LDL is a good marker for heart disease. That elevated LDL means they're at a greater chance of having a heart attack, but that is not true. That like couldn't be farther from the truth. In the context of high HDL and low triglycerides, there is no correlation whatsoever with high LDL and heart disease, but there is plenty of research showing high LDL as a good thing. So let's go into some of the benefits of high LDL. And these, I mean, tell me how these sound. These sound pretty good to me. Live longer, better cognitive ability, lower infection risk, and lower cancer risk. Aren't those four pretty good things?
Yeah, I want to live longer. I definitely want to be smarter. I don't want to get infected with anything, and I don't want cancer.
Yeah.
I know, that sounds like all really good things.
I know. What do you see old people do? They have dementia, they die of pneumonia, or cancer.
Yeah.
All things that LDL can help with. You know what I'm saying? So honestly, having high LDL in this context is like having a damn superpower. And there are studies showing this, and they're all going to be on the website, so please check them out. And if you go to your doctor and, like, of course, if you have an LDL over 200, they're going to say, or even a total cholesterol over 200, they're going to put you on a statin. Print out these studies and give them to them. Either, if they're a good doctor, they'll listen to you and they'll read them in their spare time, hopefully. If they're a shitty doctor, they won't, and you just need to find a new doctor. But there are three studies I pulled up that show benefits of elevated LDL. So the first one is called the Leydin 85 Plus study. And in this study, the participants who had the highest cholesterol levels were also found to have the lowest mortality, lowest cancer rates, and lowest rates of infections.
Sound like three big positives, right?
Awesome. Now. Okay. Yes. The second study.
High cholesterol is a good thing.
Is a good thing. Yeah, please make that shit clear. Okay, repeat that every time. The second study was called the Lothian Birth Cohort Study. It showed that those with the highest cholesterol levels had the lowest rates of hypertension, lowest rates of stroke and coronary artery disease, as well as higher cognitive function compared with those who had lower cholesterol levels.
So, high cholesterol means you have lower blood pressure, lower risk of having a stroke, lower risk of having heart disease, and you're also going to be smarter than if you have lower cholesterol.
Yes. Have you seen someone with dementia in your life?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
It's fucking sad.
Oh, it is.
You know what I mean? Like, no one wants that.
Like, I don't know how bad it is for the person with it, because they might not know what's going on.
Yeah.
But for the family around, man, it is so rough.
It's sad. You know what I'm saying? And cholesterol plays a huge role in that.
Seeing a loved one that you know, like, they don't even recognize you, or they think that you're somebody from their childhood. Like, it's such a sad thing.
It is. So, the third study, and I've mentioned this study a million times in a bunch of different podcasts because it's so huge, but it's a Framingham study. So, this is a quote directly from them. Men whose total cholesterol levels were below 190 were twice as likely to contract any kind of cancer than those whose cholesterol was over 280. And this is that quote from 1980. This is the longest running study in the world. This study started in 1948. Like, this isn't some mom and pop type shit. These are heavy hitting studies.
And like, so the magic number is 200. If you're above 200, you need to lower it according to like the medical profession.
Yes.
So 190 is
golden.
It's golden. Like, it's, you know, it's barely, it's almost at that point where they should be putting on you a statin.
Yeah.
So you're twice as likely to get cancer as if somebody that has extremely high cholesterol, like at a 280, 280 is way over that mark.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, hey, our treatment is not working at all for heart disease.
Not at all.
And it's definitely not improving all-cause mortality, which is, like, the real measurement that you should be going off of.
It is, yeah. So I just wanted to make that clear that high LDL in the context of high HDL, low triglycerides, low insulin, low inflammation is a great thing. Like, you will live longer, you will not get as sick as often, you will not get dementia, you will not get cancer. Or at least, you know, the odds are in your favor. So don't, if you're out there and your HDL is high, do not worry about it. You know, eat right and do your thing and consider yourself blessed, honestly, because it's a good thing.
Yeah, and if you are worried, I mean, honestly, like, if you do get, you get your cholesterol numbers back, they don't look good. Okay, there are things that you should do. Definitely, if you're worried about it, get a CAC scan, a coronary artery calcification scan. That is actually going to tell you what your risk of heart disease is, like how far it's progressed. If you have any signs of disease, or if you have, or if you're like, hey, you can have a heart attack any day now.
Yeah.
Like, that's what you really need to do. The cholesterol markers are basically just predictors, and they're very, 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 very poor predictors. Like, they honestly, you might as well flip a coin.
It's a shot in the dark.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, honestly, so why would LDL be this predictive? What's going on there? So, if LDL was so bad and it had the ability to kill us by causing heart disease so readily, then evolution would have selected LDL out a long time ago. Those with higher LDL would not have survived as well as those without it, and those high LDL genes would have been weeded out. However, LDL was preserved by evolution, meaning it serves an important role, and is not some big like boogeyman that uninformed people make it out to be. Now, that's the same argument kind of with diabetes. Like, it would have been weeded out through evolution. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
So, now I do want to end here with, if you have low HDL, high triglycerides, high LDL, high insulin, high inflammation, guess what? You are sick and you're probably 99% diabetic. So you should get your blood sugar under control. And in that context, high LDL isn't a good thing, but it's not LDL's problem. You are just, your metabolism is deranged, right? You need to take action and change it. But what's the best way to do that? Low carb.
Oh, by far.
The answer is keto. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? The answer is keto every time. So, I don't know. Hopefully, I broke down keto well. And the people out there who do have those kind of iffy blood markers can rest at ease that they're actually healthy. They're on the right track. And look in the mirror, man. You look better. You feel better. You're thinking more clearly. You have more energy throughout the day. You have appetite control for once in your life. Like, you're on the right track. Don't focus on LDL.
Oh, definitely. Especially if you have, like, 10 things that are saying you're good, and then you have one thing that's saying that you're bad, and that one thing is very shaky evidence at best. Yeah, I definitely wouldn't use that as, like, the gold standard.
No, not at all.
But one thing I do want to mention, though, like, if you are somebody that's been eating a low-carb diet for a very long time, or just, like, a pretty consistent diet, and you get your cholesterol numbers, you know, checked out fairly regularly, if all of a sudden your LDL does go through the roof and, like, nothing has really changed in your lifetime, that's something you might want to look into. That might be a red flag. Because, hey, LDL transports a lot. Like, so, hey, if you are transporting a shit ton of extra antioxidants and that's why your LDL went up, you know, there's probably some sort of bad thing going on.
Maybe.
But that just means I need further tests. That doesn't mean I need to start taking medication off of this one.
Or change my diet. Or, yeah, exactly. Start eating carbs again, something like
that. Yeah, I mean, it's just a snapshot in time. It's just telling you how you are at this one time. And there's, Dave Feldman has shown, how easy you can play with your cholesterol numbers.
Yeah, like super easy.
You know, just a couple days. It doesn't take very long. I think he's even shown it, like, you can change it within hours.
Yes, he has it within hours. He's got completely different numbers within hours. And you know, it's so sad. He's, I kind of feel bad for the guy. He gets blood drawn probably more than anybody. He gets blood tests all the time. I'm talking like multiple times a day just to show how variable these numbers are.
Well, don't feel bad for him. He's doing it to himself.
I guess. Yeah, he is. He is.
In the name of science for everybody.
For everybody else. Honestly, sometimes I feel bad for the people who get these blood tests. Just think, I don't know, for whatever reason you're stressed out, for whatever reason your diet wasn't on point the day before you went to the doctor, and that day your cholesterol was 220, and they get put on a statin for the rest of their life.
Yeah.
That's sad, you know?
And what's really sad is, like, that's almost like a universal thing. Or not a universal, it's an American thing.
It's very common.
You're not going to go to, like, a primary care physician, and he's not going to do it. I mean, like, if you do have that one doctor, great job for you.
Yeah, good luck.
I mean, but that's very rare. I mean, almost every single one is, like, over 200, on it,
yeah.
Or what is it for LDL alone? Is it 150? Or
I don't know.
Somewhere around there,
right? Yeah, I know 200 is the magic marker for total. Yeah. Do we want to go into ways to do keto wrong?
I think we should save that for next week.
Okay. So there are ways to do the keto diet wrong, for sure. But we'll go into that next week and kind of break down how you should do it more correctly. This week was mainly just about the science behind ketosis, what it really is. It's not some crazy ass thing. It's pretty basic biology type stuff. And
you don't have to worry about ketoacidosis. No. You don't have to worry about high LDL. Usually it's only temporary. And there's actually, like, very good reasons why it would go up.
Yeah, like LDL, man. LDL is a shit, okay? Like, it got blamed, man. It got a bad rap and it never should have, you know?
No. I mean, everybody needs a scapegoat for sugar. Nobody wants to blame sugar for anything. So we have all these other fake demons out there.
We do. It's sad. Did you have a tip of the week this week?
So my tip of the week is just going to be kind of like a few combined just for getting through Thanksgiving. We got that big holiday coming up. Hopefully you listen to it before Thanksgiving. I'm not sure if you really will. This is coming out the Wednesday night before.
Yeah, probably not.
But whatever. So one of the main ones that I like to, one of the things I like to preach is don't schedule your own cheat meals. Let life schedule a cheat meal for you.
I love that, by the way.
And this is a perfect opportunity for it. So for me, like, I've been eating good, like, the last few weeks. This is my cheat meal. I'm going to eat whatever I want to. I get stuffing on my, like, on the table one day out of the year. I'm eating me some stuffing.
I'm going ham.
Yeah. I mean, I probably won't go, like, that crazy with it, but I'm definitely going to get some. If somebody makes some, like, homemade cheesecake, I'm going to have me some homemade cheesecake. Like, not a big deal. Like, you know, take advantage of this type of stuff. Like, hey, we have all these advances in technology. You'd be dumb not to take advantage of it. We do not live in caveman at times, so you don't have to eat like a caveman all the time.
Yeah.
So that's one thing. Another one is, like, hey, if you're going over to somebody's house and you don't really know what's going to be over there, or let's say you are one of those people that really wants to stay on your diet, you either have some, like, big goals coming up. Okay, that's perfectly fine. Eat before you go over there is, like, the biggest one I could recommend. That way, like, you're in control. You see that stuffing, you're like, you know what, I need to have it, but I'm just going to have, like, one little bite instead of putting a mountain full of stuffing and mashed potatoes on your plate. You know, like what you would do if you were just starving. So eating beforehand is a really good way to go. Load up on the stuff that you know you want to eat and it's going to be healthy for you. So the dark meat, like the turkey legs. We did a Thanksgiving at my my future mother-in-law's house over the weekend. That's what I went for. I saw that turkey leg. Bam. That's my meat right there.
Got it.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Do something like that. Eat the stuff that you want first. And then after you're done eating like all that very nutrient-dense food, the turkey, the ham, that type of thing, then move on to the other stuff. Use like that stuffing as a dessert. Don't use that as your go-to meal because then you'll definitely overeat that. Like if you are going to have the dessert, whatever, that's on you. One easy way to deal with like the blood sugar spike that's going to be a result of this big meal and especially this big carb-heavy meal is to do something to get rid of it. So, all right, maybe you can go on a walk. If you can go on a walk, that's great. But, you know, hey, it's Thanksgiving. The weather's not great everywhere. Maybe you can just sneak off to the bathroom and do, like, 20 air squats real quick. 20 bodyweight squats. Maybe drop down, do some push-ups, something like that. Just go to a different room so you don't, like, look awkward and doing push-ups in front of your family while everybody else is on the couch passing out.
Yeah.
So you can either do some sort of low-level activity. I'm going to try and go on a walk. If I can't get a walk in, I'm going to sneak away to the bathroom and do like some bodyweight squats real quick. So like those are just a couple things. Low level activity, eat before you go. And like I said, like, hey, let this be a life cheat meal instead of like, you know, your own.
Yeah, no, I agree with that 100%. And I don't know what I'm going to eat tomorrow. I'm going to get my normal meals in on top of whatever I eat on Thanksgiving. You know, like I am going to be the guy who brings food to Thanksgiving, but it's only going to be my food. You know what I mean? But if I want whatever, some homemade pie, I'm going to eat it, you know?
What are you doing anyway?
Going to my family's and my wife's family's.
Oh, so you got two?
I got two, okay. Yeah. Uh-huh. So it should be fine. It should be a good day.
Yeah, we're going to a restaurant. I think it's like at a golf course.
Okay.
So they should have prime rib and they should have, I think it's like crab or lobster.
Nice.
So that's my plate.
There you go. It's
prime rib and crab.
Oh, that's a great Thanksgiving.
And I already had stuffing. I already got my like yearly
turkey fix.
Yeah, so I'm good off of that. I might do a little bit of turkey just because like it's Thanksgiving. I feel like I have to.
Yeah.
But tradition. Yeah, it's mostly going to be prime rib and crab.
That's cool. No, that's really good. Well, all right, man. That's another podcast in the books. Hopefully everyone enjoyed it. You can find us at TNTWellnessAndNutrition.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, so feel free to reach out anytime.
Yeah, thanks for listening to the podcast. Hopefully you guys got a lot out of it. Share this episode with a friend. Also, remember to rate and subscribe on your favorite podcast provider. That's either Apple Podcasts, Google Play, SoundCloud, Stitcher, or YouTube. Hope everybody has a happy and healthy Thanksgiving.